Today, Xiaomi is a giant. It's the world's third largest phone maker, and it also has the world's fastest growing car business that makes everything from regular EVs to supercars that cost well north of $100,000. But to understand how they got here, you have to look at their much more humble beginnings. This is Mi Tu. He wears a hat inspired by Lei Feng, a symbol of China's communist revolution, and he was Xiaomi's official mascot back when the company launched in 2010. Similarly, the name Xiaomi translates to millet, the grain, and it's thought to be inspired by this famous quote from China's communist revolutionary leader Mao Zedong. Xiaomi Jia Bu Qiang, it translates to millet and hand rifles, and it refers to how in the 1940s, the then poor and nascent Communist Party's army successfully fought against and defeated much richer foreign-backed opponents using nothing but millet and simple rifles. Now, when I say communist revolutionary, the foreign mind typically latches onto the communist part, which is a rather odd match for a tech giant that makes, among other things, luxury EVs for rich consumers. But it's mostly the second part, that of revolution and successful struggle against overwhelming opposition, which Xiaomi's founder Lei Jun thought his company had to emulate to succeed. He embedded these ideals deep into every process of Xiaomi from the start, and as a result, he created one of the most unique and surprising companies in the world. Disclaimer, Xiaomi was in no way involved in the making of this video. My Xiaomi 17 Pro review unit was sent to me by Trading Shenzhen, an importer who I've linked to below, and the video was sponsored by Insta360, whose massive Black Friday deals I'll talk about later. Xiaomi released its first smartphone, the Mi 1, in 2011. That is 4 whole years after the first iPhone launched, which in smartphone terms at the time was an eternity. Xiaomi was a complete latecomer and a small startup, while by 2011, Apple, Samsung, and Huawei, for example, were already giants with a collective iron grip on the market of both smartphones and other adjacent product categories as well. To challenge these giants from the bottom, Lei Jun decided that his company had to adopt tactics similar to those of the revolutionaries. Of course, every successful revolution starts by building a core of true believers. People that are so committed to the cause that they'll carry the revolution on their backs. And so, before he even sold his first product, Lei Jun started by building an army of Xiaomi loyalists he called Mi fans. To recruit them, Xiaomi built MIUI as their first product ever. Not a phone yet, but instead what we call a custom ROM. Basically a version of Android that Xiaomi customized to be more attractive to tech enthusiasts who could then install that on the phones that they already owned. Back in the early days, MIUI spread like wildfire through smartphone enthusiast circles, and I installed it on my Galaxy S2, for example. Around 2010, most Android phones still ran pretty badly optimized operating systems with hardly any support, but MIUI was polished, super customizable, got updated often weekly, and it was completely free. And better yet, Xiaomi from the start invited Mi fans, especially those in China, to submit feature requests, bug reports, and to vote on features, and they took all of this very seriously. Before Lei Jun founded Xiaomi, he led a software firm in China called Kingsoft, so he was very comfortable with launching a software product first, and it proved to be a huge success, killing 2 birds with 1 stone. First, he of course acquired a huge rabid base of Mi fans, especially in China, and when the first actual phone launched a year later, this group was ready to support them right out of the gate. But then second, all of that early testing also ensured that Xiaomi's first ever phone launched with software that people were actually guaranteed to like. 2 birds, 1 stone. The IKEA effect is the phenomenon where people genuinely feel that a piece of furniture that they themselves put together is worth more than an equivalent piece that they bought ready-made from the store. In fact, the study from 2011 found that subjects were willing to pay a pretty staggering 63% premium for their own creations, and by letting Mi fans shape their own software, Lei Jun managed to convert tons of people into hardcore fans before they even made their first paid product. And over the years, they kept nurturing that community to a remarkable degree. At many of the firm's launch events, the most dedicated Mi fans were invited to attend, sitting right along journalists, big business partners, and Xiaomi staff. There are loads of community events, both online and offline, for the fans, and the most hardcore Mi fans are even invited to, for example, tour Xiaomi's factories. The new car factory is apparently especially popular as it has a continuous stream of fans who are invited to see the production live, giving them unprecedented levels of access. Loads of companies talk about listening to their customers or having a community, but this one actually did it, because Lei Jun knew that for his revolution to succeed, he needed his true believers. Now, there are some caveats here. First, from the start, Xiaomi has put the Chinese market first. It's their biggest market by far, and it's the one where the company has spent most of its energy. Since Chinese fans have very different preferences from the rest of us, and since they drive most of the firm's overall product decisions, those of us who live outside of China might not feel as engaged by the brand as the Mi fans do at home. Second, of course, as the firm grew and as its product portfolio became more complex, the level of fan involvement in their product decisions has inevitably decreased. That said, especially in the early days, building an army of loyal Mi fans was a cornerstone of Leijun's strategy. And even today, Xiaomi claims that they have more than 20 million people who use 5 or more devices connected to their servers at any given time. That is, more than 20 million people who use maybe a Xiaomi phone, a tablet, a TV, a robot vacuum, a car, and more at the same time. Clearly, their base of superfans is still very strong. Now, of course, having followers is not enough for a revolution. There's also the part about winning a war with nothing but millet and rifles, right? For a revolution to succeed, it needs very specific mechanisms that allow it to win despite having very limited resources. And for Xiaomi, that meant developing very innovative product and sales strategies. Starting with sales, traditional brands typically sold their devices through mobile carriers and retailers, which required huge markups, and also meant that the firm had unsold stock lying around between warehouses for weeks and months, tying up their money. But instead, Xiaomi pioneered a brand new model they called online flash sales. The company initially sold all of their devices over their own webshop, cutting out all of the expensive middlemen, and they also intentionally produced way too few products, which would always sell out within minutes, meaning that they never had to keep any phones in stock for long. All of this allowed them to keep their prices extremely low, undercutting their competitors by half at times, which, combined with the artificial scarcity, led to Chinese consumers going into a sort of buying frenzy whenever a new batch of phones went on sale. And this then also allowed Xiaomi to avoid spending any money on marketing because their Mi fans evangelized everything on their behalf. So that was their sales model. It was basically guerrilla tactics that allowed Xiaomi to sell loads of phones on a very small budget. And their product strategy was equally thifty. You already know that their software MIUI was developed in public, with Xiaomi outsourcing much of their testing and feature ideation to users who happily did that for free. But the firm also outsourced everything else it could as well. While competitors like Samsung, Huawei, Oppo, and Vivo typically operated their own factories, Xiaomi opted to outsource its manufacturing completely. And meanwhile, in the early days, Xiaomi also just happily copied what other brands had already proven to be popular. There were no self-developed parts or technologies at all, no risky designs, and they just let the other firms take the risk of figuring out what the market did or did not want. Today, we would call this the fast follower strategy, and this massively reduces both risk and also R&D expenses. And when a few years after their first phone, Xiaomi also started to build up its huge portfolio of IoT devices like fitness bands, smart lights, robot vacuums, and so on, the company completely outsourced those. They didn't even develop any of the products themselves, they just found other firms who had good products but weak branding, and just integrated those into the Xiaomi ecosystem and sold them under their own brand. Just like how the communist revolutionaries beat their enemies with nothing but millet and hand rifles, Xiaomi managed to beat their opponents despite not having big factories or big R&D teams, and still they grew like absolute wildfire. In only about 4 years, they went from being a startup to China's largest smartphone brand by sales. Xiaomi was number one in China. Like Mao Zedong, Leijun successfully conquered his country on a budget and on the back of his loyal fans. But then the realization quickly came that the tools that they needed to fight a revolution were not the tools that they needed once that revolution was won. Xiaomi now had a country to run, or essentially a country-sized company, that is, and they needed a very different approach. Xiaomi's meteoric rise was followed by a painful collapse starting around 2015. For a few years, the company's sales started to decline, and customers actually started to turn away from them. Every Chinese smartphone company copied Xiaomi's strategy, and they created their own online-only budget brands. Huawei created Honor, Oppo created OnePlus, ZTE created Axon, and so on. Suddenly, Xiaomi found themselves tasting their own medicine and fighting an unhealthy price war against richer opponents who could afford to bleed them dry. Meanwhile, consumers, especially in China, quickly started to demand more premium smartphones as the market matured. This wealthier part of the market shunned the budget Xiaomi experience, and they gravitated towards companies like Apple and Huawei, who'd spent long years building premium brands, tightening their control over quality, and also developing strong in-house R&D teams that actually created differentiation. The playing field had changed, and Xiaomi had to adapt. And thankfully, Leijun was actually flexible enough to realize this, and he pivoted his company into a whole new direction. In terms of branding, the Xiaomi Rabbit first lost its red star from its hat in favor of just the Xiaomi logo and then got more and more phased out altogether. Meanwhile, in more and more places like the firm's websites and stores, the Xiaomi brand was just reduced to Mi, and its references to old revolutionary slogans were basically forgotten. As for products, they created a sub-brand called Redmi, which continued to be focused on being as aggressively priced as possible, but the mainline Xiaomi phones increasingly became more and more high-end. Turning a budget brand into a premium one took loads of work over many years, and it required Xiaomi to completely change how it made and sold their products too. In terms of sales, they abandoned their online-only flash sale model, and they embraced offline retail to the point where in China they now have 17,000 stores. Premium physical locations are one of the easiest ways to convey quality to regular consumers. Meanwhile, Xiaomi also brought manufacturing in-house to get a tighter grip on quality. In 2020, they opened their first factory, starting with batches of their first foldable phone. By last year, essentially all of Xiaomi's premium models were made in-house by their own factories. Xiaomi's car business was built with in-house factories from the start, and they're increasingly moving more and more of their appliance products over to their own facilities next, too. Branding and marketing also became a bigger focus, with Xiaomi, for example, partnering with Leica, a high-end camera brand for their flagship phones. And the firm also brought R&D in-house little by little too. Their first notable attempt was perhaps the creation of a self-developed chip called the Surge S1 in 2017. This project largely failed, only having sold 600,000 units, but Xiaomi never fully gave up on their chip ambitions. In 2020, Lei Jun officially announced that he wanted his firm to become a quote, hardcore technology company, so they tried again. A year later, they launched the Surge P1, a fast-charging chip, then the Surge G1, a battery management chip, and next came the fantastically named X-Ring T1, which is a full SoC. This one was built for smartwatches, which is a bit less challenging than going straight for phones right away, but it included, for example, Xiaomi's first ever self-designed wireless 4G modem. And meanwhile, earlier this year, they then released the X-Ring O1, which is the company's first proper high-end smartphone chip. It launched in their flagship Xiaomi 15S Pro phone and also in the Xiaomi Pad 7 Ultra earlier this year, and it's quite a big deal. Now, the Xiaomi 17 Pro that I have here still runs a Snapdragon chip, so the company clearly hasn't transitioned exclusively to using their own chips just yet, but they're clearly evolving their chip design business rapidly. And being one of the few smartphone companies in the world who have successfully developed their own high-end SoCs has put them in a very elite club indeed. Meanwhile, to continue with their hardcore technology push, Xiaomi is also one of the few phone makers who developed their own AI models. Theirs is called MiMo, and it's an open-sourced large language reasoning model. It powers a lot of Xiaomi's AI in phones sold in China, but also the company's AI glasses, and it's also built into their car by default. And then talking of software, Xiaomi is also now moving more and more towards having its own operating system. Of course, their first ever product was a very heavily customized version of Android called MIUI, and they've continued to make big tweaks to the system ever since, but then in 2017, they released something called Vela OS, which is a self-developed operating system that powers a ton of their IoT devices like those found in their smart home ecosystem. Then in 2019, they started work on something called Mina OS, a microkernel security system. In 2022, they launched their own operating system for cars, and then the next year, they announced that they would fuse all of their operating system efforts on all of their device types into one single system they call HyperOS. Now, if you've ever heard of Huawei's HarmonyOS, or indeed seen the two logos side by side, you will have noticed that Xiaomi is very obviously trying to emulate what Huawei has already done. Huawei years ago started the process of slowly replacing Android and unifying their systems, at least in China, where they now ship their smartphones with a version of HarmonyOS that had its Android kernel swapped out for a Huawei one, and which can now only run Android apps in a kind of optional virtual machine layer on top of the system when required. This is a true alternative operating system which required Huawei to carefully replace parts of Android bit by bit over many years. Meanwhile, Xiaomi's HyperOS, at least on phones, is obviously not quite there yet, as this Xiaomi 17 Pro is still mostly just heavily modified Android under the hood. That said, with each year, Xiaomi is replacing more and more bits, clearly wanting to unify more of their portfolio across phones, IoT devices, and more. And so in total, with operating systems, chips, AI models, manufacturing, and more all being now brought in-house, it's clear that Xiaomi is now working very hard to become a real vertically integrated tech giant with deep technical capabilities. Gone are the days of the revolution. They're now a true giant playing in the big leagues, they're investing heavily, and it seems to be working for them. For many years, they struggled to establish themselves as a premium brand, but in the first quarter of this year, Xiaomi apparently recorded an 81% year-on-year jump in premium handset shipments, according to Canalys. The Xiaomi 17 series, for example, has been the company's most successful flagship phone launch yet, and I can certainly see why. In its first month of going on sale, it made up a record 35% of the company's sales, according to Counterpoint, which is a lot for Xiaomi. They're finally leaving their reputation as a budget brand behind. And meanwhile, their progress with cars have been even more impressive. They only started to sell their EVs in March of 2024, but then by the first half of 2025, after less than a year of rapid growth, cars had already made up almost 20% of their revenue. If they keep up their current pace of growth, cars could become their biggest source of revenue in just another year or two. Better yet, while their phone business still only has gross profit margins of 12% after years of effort to walk up the price ladder, their car business launched at 24% out of the gate, making this business significantly more profitable for Xiaomi too. The company clearly feels that it can afford to charge extra here. But meanwhile, the opposite of charging you extra is my sponsor, Insta360. They have a huge Black Friday sale across their portfolio, knocking prices up to $120 off, and if you use my link, they also give you extra gifts like this microphone on top of their discounts. Here are a few highlights, starting with the Ace Pro 2. This is my favorite of their cameras if I want to have maximum image quality, especially in challenging lighting conditions like when I go diving. There, the huge 8K sensor paired with Leica colors does an excellent job. And not only is the camera itself $65 off, you also get a free 256GB micro SD card extra with my link, and even the videography bundle is on discount despite that being brand new. That means the cage, those really cool lenses, the hood, etc., all of those are already on discount. Next, if you want a classic 360-degree camera that lets you reframe your shots afterward, you can't really beat their flagship camera called the X5. It hides its own selfie stick, making it invisible, so it's like having a camera person or a drone following you around, and guess what? This too is on discount. It's up to $100 off with a bundle, and if you use my link, you also get a free set of dual lenses. Or how about the Go Ultra? This is the tiny little camera that you can snap magnetically basically everywhere, including its own little accessories, and that way you get amazing POV shots like what I got climbing around on this really cool adventure park here in Berlin not long ago. It's perfect for when both of your hands are busy, but you still want to film what you're doing in gorgeous 4K. This one is $70 off, and with my link, you also get a whole extra wireless microphone. And it's a really nice one too. Meanwhile, I also looked at my analytics, and the product that my audience bought the most often is actually their webcams, and I can certainly see why. The Link 2, for example, is now $50 off, plus with my link, you also get an extra tripod. You get a very nice 4K image, a gimbal, and a massive boost to your image quality, especially if you film in anything other than perfect lighting. And meanwhile, if you're into filming with your phone, their gimbals are also 20 to 30% off, and with my link, you get an extra MagSafe phone mount. So be sure to check out the links below for those extra gifts. Happy filming, and I'll see you in the next video.